The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, I'm Bill Kristol, editor-at-large of The Bulwark.
And hi, I'm Mark Ertling, a Bulwark contributor and a retired lieutenant general. And this is your fourth edition of Command Post, part of The Bulwark Fakes. This is where we go beyond the headlines and take a look at the military implications of some of the things that are going on in our country right now.
And really, the first episodes have been terrific, I think, Mark. So let's see if we can keep up to that level today. I hope I don't drag it down too much. It's Wednesday afternoon, January 28th, just so people know in case there's stuff that happens in the next 12 hours. You'll know when we're speaking. I thought we'd talk about what's happening in Minneapolis, actually, from the point of view of someone who was had many positions in the U.S. military, but culminating in a three-star general who really has thought deeply about the questions of soldiers and keeping order and its relationship or comparison to some of the other things that are done to keep order in different societies, and I guess including ours now. And we'll get to a little bit on Greenland and on Venezuela later, which you've written about, both of which you've written about excellently. But I think this conversation was partly prompted by the fact that a friend of mine, I think I texted you this a couple of days ago, texted me and said, Bill, why is General Hertling so, he's a big fan of yours, why is he so reluctant about the use of the military in these situations? Surely they'd be better disciplined, better trained than these ICE and Border Patrol guys. This is after the killing on Saturday. Of Mr. Preddy, wouldn't it be better maybe kind of to send some of the military in an emergency way? And I said, I think there are good arguments. I sort of sympathetic. I instinctively one sees that case, but I think there are good arguments against it. But I'll let Mark Hertling make those arguments if you wish to.
Yeah, sure. Well, there's two parts of that, Bill, and we'll talk about both of them. The first is sending in the National Guard. The National Guard actually has a mission set called support for civilian authorities. When they do that, they can go into an area, guard buildings, conduct administrative or logistics functions, but they can't arrest and they can't harm or approach fellow citizens in a policing type way. Even if you're a military policeman or woman within the military, you can't do that. It's against the law. In order to do that, you have to be legalized through the Insurrection Act. And that's both guard and active duty components of the military. So if I'm sitting in the Minnesota National Guard and I'm called out to do different functions, I can do relatively supportive functions to policing authorities. Like I said, guard buildings, put up fences, do whatever, but I can't arrest somebody. If the president sees it in his mind to call out the Insurrection Act, that changes everything. And that means that both the National Guard and the active duty forces are then federalized, and they can do whatever the president wants them to do because there's a threat of insurrection. That's what the Insurrection Act's all about. So at that point, you can actually ask the military to conduct the policing functions, arresting people, detaining people, putting them in jail, guarding jails, and you can also use them in a kinetic sense. And what I mean by that is they can fire on American citizens because of it's a potential insurrection. So you don't want the military, even though they are much better trained and much better led than some of the yahoos we've been seeing on the streets of Minneapolis over the last couple of weeks. What I've seen in terms of the CBP and the ICE patrols is their leadership is terrible. They have very little training in what they're supposed to do. And yet they are dressing up as if they want to be soldiers with all the kit, with the arms, with the weapons. Now, certainly police forces need weapons at times to protect themselves, but the way they've been generating the threats using bear spray, pepper spray, and even pointing pistols at people is contrary to what we believe a police force should do unless they are threatened. So that's the difference between what we have in policing and even the ICE and CBP, even though their mission is much smaller than what you might have in a militarized, deployed, and federalized force that would go in under the purview of Northern Command.
Yeah, so let's just to take another second on that distinction, because it's so important. It does get elided. And there are sub-distinctions. It's a complicated matter, whether the National Guard... I mean, normally the National Guard is activated by a governor, and there's a crisis, there's floods or something. The normal authorities are very busy doing many million other things, and they help the authorities do things. And that's always been the way I've seen it. The National Guard helps existing law enforcement or rescue or emergency service providers to do what they're doing. And often the way they help, as you said, is they guard the buildings, you know, so the police can go out and take care of whatever the problem on the streets is, whatever. And they're not allowed, because of the Posse Comitatus Act, to independently arrest people or be involved in law enforcement. So that's reasonably non-problematic, I suppose. I mean, it can go awry, obviously, but and usually done at the request of the governor. Now, obviously, under President Trump this past year, he has activated the Guard contrary to the wishes of governors, which I think does get more problematic. But even so, they've at least claimed that, and I think it's true mostly, that they were restricted in what they were doing more the guarding of federal facilities, and they weren't out. They did some patrolling and in LA and then in DC, but much less, I think, than we're seeing from ICE and the Border Patrol. That's established. The National Guard trains for that, right? I mean, they're not unfamiliar with the notion that they would have to go someplace and guard some federal facilities. Yeah.
Yeah, not at all. In fact, that's one of their missions. And they train on things like riot control as well. So they're prepared using batons and shields and helmets and things like that to prevent the destruction of equipment or cars or whatever you happen to see. But again, what we're talking about is something very different.
Yeah. So let's explain. So then the Insurrection Act legalizes using the military in effect as police, in effect, or
it actually uses them as soldiers against.
So,
any kind
okay,
of
fair enough. So explain that. That's a good way of putting it.
So,
that's a good
clarification. You know, the difference is when you have police forces, they usually fall under the mantra of protect and serve the people. When you have the military, they do things like attack, destroy, defend, kill. I mean, it is used as a kinetic force. So deploying the military into action by proclaiming the Insurrection Act says basically, like it did during the Civil War, we have fellow citizens who are trying to overthrow the government, so you can use deadly force against them. That's the difference. And now, certainly, like we saw in Los Angeles, military units can be deployed, active duty military units, even the Marines in Los Angeles, which was somewhat odd because they almost never do that mission, but they were limited in what they could do to the same thing the National Guard can do. They can't police, they can't arrest, they can't detain, they can only guard different things. So again, it's a very slippery slope. And I personally think that the president was attempting to instigate riots where it appeared that the citizens of Minneapolis were rebelling against the government through violent actions. So therefore, they would have to be put down. And in order to do that, you would declare the Insurrection Act because it was an attempt to overthrow a legally projected government. So those are the kind of differences you're talking about whenever you use the military and tell them you are now facing your fellow citizens and you can prevent them from doing actions through any force possible. And it's controlled a little bit by what the military would be given from their commanders called rules of engagement. But that harkens back to some things we've heard Secretary Hegseth say when he's proclaimed, we're not going to mess with rules of engagements. Those things just tie our hands. We're going to go in and be lethal and, you know, hooah hooah and all the things that military guys do. And that's where you begin to misunderstand the role of active service members in terms of policing their fellow citizens. And truthfully, but it really boils down to the American public has trust in the military to fight our nation's war and do the things we're asked to do. But that trust will become broken if you're facing military against fellow citizens. How do you react to that? And it puts both sides in a very difficult situation because the military then has to counter any citizens that might be rebelling.
Yeah, and this is why you've been so adamant about how dangerous it would be and what a mistake it would be to invoke the Insurrection Act. I guess I was in the White House in 1992, Vice President Quayle's chief of staff, so I had no real role in this, but I was there in the meetings where it was they decided to do it. They did invoke the Insurrection Act because the LA riots were really out of control. Governor Wilson and the mayor were very alarmed that it could get further out of control. And I said the quickest thing to do is to get, I think it was active duty, actually military from nearby.
It was.
Out there on the streets. But again, this was done by a president, George H.W. Bush, who had no interest in using the military anything in any other way than to stabilize the situation. The Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, I guess Colin Powell would have been chairman of the Chiefs. I mean, there was no interest in causing trouble, if I could put it this way. There really was just a sense that this was a very unusually bad situation and the military could help. And they were there briefly and I think were sent home pretty quickly, actually.
Yeah, they were.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
The other difference in the 92 riots in Los Angeles was the fact that the rioters were using deadly force against fellow citizens. So that's when you call in a bigger force that is prepared to use weapons against people who are shooting at people and burning things down and that kind of stuff. So that's another key difference between 92 and today.
No, that's important, yeah. And LAPD, obviously, since the riots were partly about an action of LAPD a year before, they were both a little swamped, but also not trusted by major parts of the community. So I think it was it was an exceptional thing to do. It went fine. It went well in the sense that I think it did help calm the situation and it was resolved. But I think the point you're getting to also about the kinds of things Secretary Hegseth has said about the military and President Trump himself in that speech to the generals at Quantico, right? About this will be, like, what did he say? This will be your training ground or something in the U.S. cities? Or, I mean, that's a very different vision, right? And that must really have sent chill. I mean, what did people think when they heard that, senior officers like yourself?
Yeah, I was going to use that exact word. It sent a chill. When you start saying we're going to train on the streets of America, that is not what we do. There are training grounds for the military, which are very well controlled. And when you're talking about putting the military, which again is a high rating of respect among our fellow citizens, against the citizens in the streets, that's going to cause nothing but problems. And going back to, you know, the deployment of soldiers, there's only been one time that I know of in the history of the United States, other than the Civil War, where soldiers were deployed into an area that the governor didn't want them. It was against the Desegregation Act, and the governor wasn't obeying a federal mandate. So
I remember vividly, I mean, as a kid, and then later, obviously, when I was, you know, in school and college and so forth, the photos, but it's clear the military is there defending little kids, basically, and their families, who are going to school as the courts had ordered, over against massive citizen resistance. But citizen resistance is being helped, honestly, by local law enforcement types, right? And so that's right. Where you sort of need to get an independent force in. But they didn't go around shooting at you know, citizens, even if the citizens were segregationists with distasteful views on race matters, right? There was no thought right. That they were there to protect and to try to keep peace as best as they could. So again, very, very different from the image that I'd say President Trump, and but really what's sad is all throughout the administration, the vice president, Secretary of Defense, Christine Ohm, what they projected is they want to use everyone, whether it's ICE and Border Patrol, obviously, but also other elements of the federal law enforcement apparatus, and then the military itself as part of this effort to deport many, many people, but also to intimidate many, many people, it seems, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's been their mantra from the very beginning. They not only want to intimidate people on the streets, but they want to, it appears to me, they want to instigate violence. And that's why we've seen so many governors and mayors say to their citizens, don't take the bait. Right. Because as soon as they take the bait and there is violence, that gives the president the option to call the Insurrection Act.
And it's literally true, just as an, again, empirical matter. Minnesota, Minneapolis, I'm no expert on the place. So maybe I'm sure it had some problems. The amount of chaos and violence in Minneapolis today, after sending in the Border Patrol and ICE, is infinitely greater than it was before, you know? And right. I mean, if they needed some help with actual criminal justice policy, there are many ways the U.S. government has to provide that kind of support. But that has not been what obviously the ICE is doing. And of course, the Border Patrol, what are they? They're trained to do things at the border, which is a complicated task and different actually from policing in cities. But again, they're there. This is not something, to my knowledge, that they are trained for at all. No. I mean, ICE isn't really trained for this either. ICE is trained to mostly to take people who have been arrested, actually, often by local police forces, and then to, if they're, for example, they serve their term, but they're undocumented immigrants and they're convicted of not going to be released back on the streets of the U.S., and ICE flies them to, in the old days, to a country that they had come from and tells them not to come back, you know? And that's, someone's got to do that, and ICE did it, and that's part of immigration enforcement, and they did some other things as well, obviously, but and Border Patrol, again, at the border. So I do think people should appreciate how it doesn't excuse, obviously, the individual behavior, not at all. In fact, some of these people have been recruited now because they want to do this, I suppose. But this was not what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, in terms of deporting, absolutely not. Again, it goes back to intimidating and instigating those who aren't illegal immigrants.
And the behavior, I've got to say, I don't know what you think about this. You haven't... Well, you've watched police departments pretty close up. Military has a certain interest in, you know, it is a kind of, it's not the same thing, but it's a cousin, you might say, and you have interacted with them, I'm sure, and you've dealt with them abroad quite a lot, I know, in Central and Eastern Europe and other places, Iraq, for that matter. The degree of just unprofessional behavior is really shocking, you know? I mean, from the masks to the taunting of people, I mean, whatever. I mean, God knows we've had bad apples, and we've had subunits of police departments that have acted badly in the South in the 30s and 40s and 50s, is a whole different story. But still, basically, in modern America, police departments are trained pretty rigorously and with real accountability and real penalty if they don't do it, to behave in a you know, appropriate way, I would say, legal way, really, and body cams and so forth, and the names, you see their names, and they have to report if something, if a firearm is discharged, certainly if someone's hurt or killed, there's an investigation automatically, and the investigation, at least allegedly, is done by an impartial reviewer, and often they, you know, put the person on leave who discharged the firearm to make sure that, you know, there was nothing was wrong was done. Police departments are pretty used to dealing with this stuff. And I'm just so struck by the contrast with ICE and the Border Patrol. I wonder what, and you can see why the police departments are upset about this.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. The police, good police departments, walk a very fine line between defending their citizens and protecting them and garnering the support of the citizenry. And that's what I think, you know, both Governor Walz and Mayor Fry have been concerned about, because they've worked very hard over the last couple of years to regain trust of the citizens in their local police departments. And because of, you know, the combination of policing and what the Border Patrol and the ICE agents are doing, it's generating a lack of trust in any kind of security forces that's roaming the streets. And I think that's where the police, who are very highly trained in this, one of the things you mentioned, my time in Iraq, we generated, helped the Iraqi citizen, government generate a police force. And we were turning policemen out in about 3 weeks at a training academy. That's way short of what you need. I mean, most police academies take, you know, 10 months to a year to train a good police officer. And it has to do with these kinds of things, gaining trust from the citizens. And it's important because you get tips, you can get a feel for the culture and the environment that you're working in. People don't get hurt. But it seems that in the last couple of weeks, that's exactly what these other agencies are not trying to do. You know, an important point came up today. Again, we're recording on Wednesday, so people will be listening to this on Thursday. But this shooting happened on Saturday. And when I first saw the film of it, it went beyond just watching someone being killed. It went to the fact, as you just said, these were untrained people. These were six guys trying to pull down one individual after pushing a woman to the ground. There was no leadership there trying to direct the charge. It was just a gang, a piling on of a gang of thugs. It's now 5 days later, and today was the day that the Border Patrol and ICE have said they are pulling the people off duty that conducted this attack and actually shot the guy 5 days after it happened. I mean, my take from a military perspective, you get a guy in a tough shooting or a violent contact with some kind of enemy that you want to kill. And even if they have shot someone and conducted a violent attack and it's resulted in a death, you still pull those people offline because human beings have to adjust to that. Beyond that, though, it's the leadership of the entire organization. How did it take 5 days to finally pull these officers who pulled the trigger off of the force? And they were, in fact, it appeared to most of us as if they were actually hiding those individuals who shot the weapon, you know, trying to get them out of there and put them in another place and not even naming that an investigation was going on. All of that is contrary to the way a democracy works.
How worried are you that it gets worse before it gets better, both in terms of what's happening on the streets, but also in terms of the Insurrection Act?
It's a great question, because on Thursday and Friday of last week, I was concerned that there was going to be a calling of the Insurrection Act. As much as not a whole lot of good things came out of this event, one of the good things is I think the administration has pulled back from thinking about doing that because they see how dangerous it is. And the American public has seen how dangerous this force is. So it better get under control. Now they're sending Tom Holman in. I don't know how much he's going to improve the conduct and the discipline of this force in a short period of time, because as you mentioned earlier, they have recruited a bunch of people that would normally not be in law enforcement in this conglomeration of these two agencies. So it's real hard stepping in as a new leader, even if you're a hardcore leader like Holman is, and changing the culture of an organization to get them to stop these kind of things. And we're still seeing it today. Again, it's Wednesday. There are still reports going on that they are approaching citizens the same way they've been doing for the last couple of weeks.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Yeah, I found this that particularly disheartening that over the last 48, 72 hours, there's many, many reports in Minneapolis and actually elsewhere in Maine and other cities of ICE and Border Patrol and maybe others, most of those two, though. Officers behaving as they have been behaving. There's no sense of, this is a wake-up call. We've got to really change our way. And that's partly, of course, because they were encouraged, I would say, by right. senior leadership in Washington to keep on going. You know, you guys have nothing to worry to apologize for or to worry about.
Well, interesting on that point, I guess it was a report today that Kristi Noem stated that she was told by Stephen Miller how to project what happened on Saturday, to talk about that he was brandishing a gun and this is a danger to officials. And when the films came out, all of those messaging and marketing of something that didn't happen was an additional lack of trust that the American people will put in the government, personified by what happened. So again, how do you get away from what we've seen over the last couple of months? That it takes a major culture shift to change that. I know because I've been in cultures like this, and it just doesn't. You can't just flip a switch and make a change overnight.
Yep. That's Well, it's hard-headed and important, though, and important for people in Congress to think about as they possibly legislate new rules and new oversight and so forth. A week ago, it's hard to believe, President Trump was in Davos and we were talking about NATO and Greenland and very important topics. You talked about it at length last week, really excellent analysis. But what happened, do you think? I mean, Trump seems to have pulled back. Is there some reason we don't? Well, what do you know? You've talked to an awful lot of people over in Europe.
Mark Rutte is the NATO Secretary General.
Charge of NATO.
He's kind of the civilian leader of the NATO alliance in Brussels, and he has been very adamant about fluffing, if you will, if you'll allow me to use that term, President Trump. He has been one of those individuals that has attempted to gain insight and trying to influence President Trump in certain ways, mostly by reinforcing some great things that the president has done and how he's contributed so much and helped NATO grow and all this other stuff that some might say is a little bit hyperbolic. But Rudy had a conversation with Trump after the conference at Davos. And evidently, right after that, President Trump started saying, well, maybe NATO can handle this, and maybe they do have a plan, and maybe it's a good idea for us to do some additional coordination with them. Well, the fact of the matter is, Bill, the issues with the Greenland-Iceland-UK gap, which is a northern defensive line in NATO, has been a topic of conversation at all NATO ministries, what they call the ministerials and all NATO meetings for the last probably 15 to 20 years. It's a critical element of the NATO Defense Alliance because of primarily climate change and how the Arctic, the Great North is melting faster than the rest of the planet. And it's opening some sea lines of communication with the Russians. And there's a great many larger powers, particularly Russia and China, going into the Arctic to try and garner some of the advantages that it may have. It's also a defensive location because there are radar spots on Greenland and Iceland and in the UK for anything that comes over the pole that might be unexpected. So a combination of changing threats to NATO has caused the 32-member alliance to really focus in all of their conversations and in their planning on what to do about the High North, as it's called. What has contributed much to that is the fact that Sweden and Finland have now entered the alliance, and they have formed a bloc of individuals called the Nordic Baltic Eight, and it consists of the five northern European countries plus the three Baltic countries, and it's become a powerhouse. And they are really forcing their agenda on the headquarters in Brussels to show them how important some of these Arctic issues are. So perhaps Trump said nobody can defend a Greenland or Iceland the way we can. You know, Iceland probably would have been next, but Greenland was the topic du jour because it's in our hemisphere. And I think Secretary Rutte probably told him, hey, look, you don't have the capability to defend it as well as the alliance would together, because there's not a whole lot of icebreakers in the U.S. military. There's not a whole lot of troops that have been trained in that kind of Arctic warfare. And that's a specialty of nations like Norway, Sweden, and Finland. So it's a combination of probably influencing President Trump to realize that a lot of his bluster probably should be pulled back a little bit and see how important this 32-nation alliance is in NATO.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And my impression is there weren't big fights with the NATO on this. There were questions, as always, about how best to coordinate and what exactly the right things to do are. But it's not as if Canada or the UK or certainly Norway, Sweden, Finland or Denmark were balking at doing things that we wanted done, right? I mean, that was one of the craziest things I thought about the rhetoric that Trump, and this seems to have been maybe spurred by Vance and others who don't like NATO and Europe. I mean, you know, making it seem like the mighty U.S. was being held back by these wimpy NATO nations. But that, I don't, in this, and that might be, you know, in theory true in some other areas, they don't spend enough on this or that, but it was certainly not, is there any reason to think this was true in this area?
No. Quickly, okay. No. You know, what's interesting is you didn't mention Canada too. I mean, all the countries that contribute to the alliance and have a great deal of interest in the Great North, the High North, as they call it, are some of the ones that President Trump has tried to push aside and say, right, they don't know what they're doing, let us take control. And I think he will quickly find, if he does the analysis or if his Department of Defense and State do the analysis, they will say, boy, it's a whole lot easier to manage this situation in the High North if you rely on the NATO partners as opposed to push them away.
Venezuela, I think you're planning to talk about that quite a lot next week, and you can explain that a little more. But Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, did testify on the Hill today, and a lot of the conversation focused on Venezuela. Any quick reactions or particular things you noticed?
Secretary Rubio's comments, his written comments, he didn't speak this at his introduction to the people he was testifying before, but it basically appeared to me that he was reinforcing what has happened almost a month ago. It was January 3rd when the attack against Maduro occurred that captured him and brought him to a U.S. prison. But in the 3+ weeks since that January 3rd strike and the capture of Maduro, Venezuela hasn't changed a whole lot. They're still a contested, unstable, and still deeply dysfunctional strategic space because of corruption, because of the oligarchs and the criminals in the area, and because the oil hasn't been tapped the way President Trump thinks it has. Now, I think Secretary Rubio mentioned that, you know, people are quickly looking at it from the short term, where President Trump is playing 3D chess, and he's looking at it from the long term. But from what I've seen in the reported remarks from Secretary Rubio, there is still no clean endpoint or clear objective in terms of what's going to happen in Venezuela. And just like it occurred on January 3rd, Bill, when the president was asked who's in charge and he turned around and said, the guys behind me are, I don't think there's anybody still in charge. Rubio made a great deal of talking to the new president of Venezuela and saying, we've got a great relationship. And she evidently backed that up by saying they have a great relationship, but there's no whole, not a whole lot of devils in the detail on what's going on.
Yeah, we'll see how this all works out, right? But so far, at least, not exactly a wonderful democracy, not even the expelling of Cubans. Well, anyway, it's not worth getting into. You'll talk more about it. Next week, what are your plans on this excellent show?
Next week, we'll probably be discussing the one-month anniversary of Venezuela, whatever happens on the scene in the streets, what is going on with the military. You know, just at the end of last week, Secretary Hegseth contributed to the space the national defense strategy, which emanates out of the national security strategy, which we in the Bulwark reported on a couple of weeks ago. But the national defense strategy, I've reviewed an article online today about that, and it has some disconnects between ends, ways, and means that I think will not be beneficial for the military. But again, we're going to ask for some input, and we have, I'm going to read it. The email address to submit your questions is commandpost@thebulwark.com. Those are all one long word. And if you're enjoying these episodes, folks have asked me to please let us know in the remarks, comments on Substack. And if you listen on YouTube or Spotify, do the same thing. And if you're listening to Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a review with your 5-star ratings and appreciate it. And you.
Commandpost@thebulwark.com is very, that's clear. And actually, it'd be great to have people ask you questions directly. And obviously, you always sift through them and figure out which ones you have time to answer and are the most important and most interesting. But, you know, because I get questions after we do one of these shows or even when I'm not on, and by people. And I think we began the show with the one that I passed on. So I really look forward to that.
Thanks, Bill. And thanks for being with me today. It's always fun talking to you. And there's a lot going on. And that's why we started this command post, to give a little bit of insight into the military and national security.
Thanks, Mark.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic.
Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.